As we continue our study in the book of Zechariah, we're now in the 8th chapter, ready to begin at the 3rd verse. At this point in the writings of Zechariah, the temple has been about half completed. All obstacles to the construction of the temple have been removed. The decree of Darius, which confirmed the decree of Cyrus, as we read about in Ezra 6, 1-14, that had been reconfirmed. All was going well. But now the delegation from Bethel had a question. And the question was, things going as well as they are, should we continue to fast? Well, he answered the question in chapter 7 and 8 of Zechariah. In 7, he gives two negative answers. And in 8, he gives two positive answers. And each of these four messages was given to impress upon the people the need to live righteously. Now, we've already covered the message given in chapter 7. We're now in chapter 8. And so, we're at the 3rd verse. Well, let's begin reading with the 1st verse of Zechariah chapter 8. Again, the word of the Lord of hosts came to me, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy, and I was jealous for her with great fury. So, God describes himself as being jealous. Jealousy is a feeling that you're going to be replaced by somebody else, like the wife's going to be replaced by another woman, or the husband be replaced by another man. And so with all the idolatry that Israel had been guilty of, God had this feeling of jealousy, he says. That's the way he describes it. It's the best way we humans can understand it. And this jealousy actually caused God to be furious. He had a rage. And the rage caused by jealousy can be directed at the unfaithful husband or wife. It can cause the jealous party to do many things to punish the guilty one. But it can also cause the jealous party to have rage toward the one who enticed his spouse to be unfaithful. This means that God's rage would also be directed toward the nations around Israel, which taught them idolatry. But some also think that this teaches that God's rage was directed toward the enemies of the Jews. In other words, God is saying, I gave your enemies, I gave them permission to afflict you, but they went beyond what they were authorized to do. Therefore, I'll deal with these enemies with fury as their just punishment. So now verse 3, which is where our lesson really starts today. He says, Thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion, and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. So, he says, I restored the city from her captivity. I will dwell among them. The city of Jerusalem shall be rebuilt, and so shall the temple. And instead of being false, unholy, and extravagant, it shall be a city of truth. It will be characterized by truth both in word and deed. The Messiah will teach here. The Lord will dwell there. And this will make it the mountain of the Lord, the holy mountain. Verse 4 says, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, There shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for a very age. So he says, There shall be a wonderful reformation in Jerusalem, and religion shall prosper there. Jerusalem, which is dealt treacherously with both God and man, shall become so famous for faithfulness and honesty that it will be called and known by the name of City of Truth, and the inhabitants of it shall be called children who will not lie. There shall be in Jerusalem a great increase of people and all the marks of a great tranquility. And the streets of Jerusalem that had been filled with the bodies of the slain shall now dwell old men and old women who have not been cut off by untimely deaths, but have the thread of their days spun out to a full length. They shall go to their grave in a full age. It's a blessing for a city to have an abundance of old people in it. It's a sign not only of healthy air, but of prevalence of virtue and the banishment of vices. It's a sign not only that the climate is temperate, but that the people also are easy to live with. And you can work with pleasure at the generation that is rising up to take their place. Verse 5. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. So he says their children shall be healthful and strong. They'll be hearty and cheerful. They're at the age to be playing games and will not begrudge that to them. They shall not be terrified with the alarms of war, but they'll enjoy a perfect security. And this is ultimately fulfilled in the gospel of the New Testament. And this idea is referred to in Galatians chapter 4, verses 21 through 31. There the Apostle Paul says, "Tell me, ye that desire to be under the law, do ye not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid and the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. Which things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants, the one from the Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Agar. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, an answer to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, Rejoice, thou barren that bearest not. Break forth and cry, thou that travailest not. For the desolate hath many more children than she which hath an husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the scripture, Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free." Now back to Zechariah chapter 8, verse 6 says, "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, If it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, saith the Lord of hosts." So we see here that man tends to limit God. Psalm 78 verses 19 and 20 say, "Yea, they speak against God. They said, Can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock that the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people? Therefore the Lord heard this and was wroth. So a fire was kindled against Jacob, and anger also came up against Israel, because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation." So we see that nothing is too hard for God. Genesis 18:14, "Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed I will return unto thee, according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son." Just because they seem too difficult for you, the Lord asks, must they be too hard for me also? The Lord can do anything that his will desires that he do. And we have to realize that. We have to live accordingly. And we have to look to God accordingly. Verses 7 and 8 of Zechariah 8 say, "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country, and I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God in truth and in righteousness." So he's telling here that his people are going to be saved from every land in which any of them may be found. From the east country, from the west country. But these promises actually apply principally to the gathering that's done in the Christian church. At the time of Zechariah, Israel had not been scattered to the west. This did not occur until the Romans did so in the first century A.D. The greater fulfillment of this prophecy occurred in the church age, with Jew and Gentile coming together in spiritual Jerusalem and being a part of the spiritual temple. We'll get some teaching on this subject from Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 through 17. "Wherefore remember, that ye being in time past Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by that which is called the circumcision, in the flesh, made by hands, that at that time ye were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope, and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, ye, who sometimes were far off, are made nigh by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace, who hath made both one, and hath broken down the middle wall of partition between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in the ordinances, for to make in himself of twain one new man, so making peace. and that he might reconcile both unto God in one body by the cross, having slain the enmity thereby, he came and preached peace to you which were afar off, and to them that were nigh. For through him we both have access by one Spirit unto the Father. Now therefore ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints, and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together groweth unto an holy temple in the Lord, in whom ye also are built together for an habitation of God through the Spirit. Again in Romans chapter 11, verses 25 through 27, the Apostle Paul says, For I would not, brethren, that ye should be ignorant of this mystery, lest ye should be wise in your own conceits, that blindness in part is happened unto Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. And so all Israel shall be saved, as it is written, There shall come out of Zion the Deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. For this is my covenant with them, when I will take away their sins. Now we go back to the 8th chapter of Zechariah, verses 9 through 17. In these verses, we see that the first 8 verses have shown that Israel will have a glorious future. So now, in view of such a glorious future, the people are exhorted to renew their efforts toward the building of the temple and toward the righteous living. Verse 9 says, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Let your hands be strong, ye that hear in these days these words by the mouth of the prophets, which were in the day that the foundation of the house of the Lord of hosts was laid, that the temple might be built. So he says here to the prophets, this phrase actually refers to Zechariah and Haggai for sure, but there may have been other prophets who did not write their prophecies down like Zechariah and Haggai did. The day, or the time of the foundation, was about 2 years before, since this message of the prophets was in the 4th year of Darius. He's encouraging those that hear the prophecy to let the hands be strong. That is, do not weaken your efforts at rebuilding the temple. Continue to do the work of the Lord. Those who lay their hands to the plow of duty shall have them strengthened with the promises of mercy. He now shows some of the discouragements they had been laboring under. Verse 10 says, For before these days there was no hire for man, nor any hire for beast, neither was there any peace to him that went out or came in because of the affliction. For I set all men, everyone, against his neighbor. Zechariah here speaks of the years before 520 B.C., described in Haggai 1:6-11, when their hassles and intrigues with the Samaritans and the love of ease and comfort caused them to be indifferent toward rebuilding the temple, resulting in divine punishment. But since they had begun to rebuild the temple, God would not treat the people as those described in verse 10. They had now reformed and were doing God's work. But before that reformation, verse 10 tells us there were no wages for man or beast. The fruits of the earth were very limited, causing shortages of food and other necessities. Merchants had no goods to export, so there was no need to hire either men or beasts. There was no friendship or good neighbors, for I had turned away every man against his neighbor, he says. There was much sin generated in all of this, since their lusts and needs caused fights and friction among them. Verse 11 says, But now I will not be under the residue of this people as in the former days, saith the Lord of hosts. Although you have been harassed and afflicted, now God will change his ways toward you. Now that you have returned to your duty, things will return to a normal relationship between you and God. Verse 12 says, For the seed shall be prosperous, the vine shall give her fruit, and the ground shall give her increase, and the heavens shall give their due, and I will cause the remnant of the people to possess all these things. So the heavens would now drop their dew, the rain, so much needed for the earth to produce. Our rain today is a constant reminder of the blessings of God above to man here on earth. It also reminds us of how much we humans depend on Him. Without the rain, we would be nothing, but we have no power over causing it to rain or keeping it from raining. We're at His mercy there entirely. Verse 13 says, "And it shall come to pass that as you were a curse among the heathen, O house of Judah and house of Israel, so will I save you, and ye shall be a blessing. Fear not, but let your hands be strong." Those who are blessed by the Lord are the blessing of the land. All society should realize this. Verses 12 and 13 describe the richness and comprehensiveness of God's promises of prosperity. But these promises look beyond the historical moment of Zechariah and the remnant of Israel to the time when Jesus Christ, the Messiah, reigns in His kingdom. That'll be the age of the New Testament church. We're now in this glorious age of the Messiah, but we can have these blessings of God if we will but serve Him. Rather than have fear, we should let our hands be strong, he says. Verses 14 and 15, "For thus saith the Lord of hosts, as I thought to punish you when your fathers provoked me to wrath, saith the Lord of hosts, and I repented not, so again have I thought in these days to do well unto Jerusalem and to the house of Judah, fear ye not." Just as God elected to punish their fathers for their disobedience, just as they provoked Him to wrath, which He repented not of, even so now, since the people have repented and returned to work in the temple, in these days God has elected to do well to Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. So He says, fear ye not. The good they are receiving now comes from God Himself. So He's saying to let them take comfort in these promises. Do not be afraid, in verse 15. Let your hands be strong, verses 9 and verse 13. Now the next two verses, verses 16 and 17. These are the things that ye shall do. Speak ye every man the truth to his neighbor. Execute the judgment of truth and peace in your gates. And let none of you imagine evil in your hearts against his neighbors. And love no false oath. For all these are things that I hate, saith the Lord. In these verses we see that, as always, the promised blessings are connected with obedience to His righteous standards. Such obedience can only be brought about by the power of the Spirit in the life of the one who has been transformed by God's grace through faith. These standards are mentioned other places in God's Word. In Psalm 15, 1 through 5, "Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? He that walketh uprightly, and worketh righteousness, and speaketh the truth in his heart. He that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor doeth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not, he that putteth not out his money to usury, nor taketh reward against the innocent, he that doeth these things shall never be moved." Again in Psalm 24, verses 3 through 4, "Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in his holy place? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul into vanity, nor sworn deceitfully." Again in Proverbs chapter 6, verses 20 through 23, "My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is a light, and reproofs and instruction are the way of life." So in summary, verses 16 and 17 are saying, allow God to perform in you these promises. Let Him do it His own way and time. But you must know that it will be done only on the condition that you are devoted to your duty. These are the things you are to do. You must never tell a lie, but speak the truth to each other. Render true and sound judgments in your courts. Tell the judges who sit in your gates to have a true regard for both truth and peace. Again, no man must have the desire to hurt his neighbor. Also, have great respect for an oath with the full intention of fulfilling it. These things that are forbidden here are all found among the seven things which the Lord hates. And those are listed in Proverbs 6, verse 16 through 19. Those verses say, these six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift and running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. And so God is simply saying here, do what's right, and I will bless you. That's what it all boils down to. Do the things that are according to my will, the things that we should be doing as decent human beings one to another, the things that are going to bring about no harm to each other. That's what it's going to take for me to bless you. He's really saying to have love one for another. Love is that condition in which we work no ill to our neighbor. Don't do anything that will bring about harm to the neighbor. That is the condition of love. That's the attitude that love causes us to have. It's not just some kind of a feeling, some kind of emotion, but it's the idea that we're not going to work any ill to our neighbor. That's paramount and foremost. That brings our lesson to a close at this time. Till next time, this is NC Craft saying, goodbye, friends.